Episode 172, What We Would Change About the Comics Industry.
Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian, bringing you theology at warp speed. I'm Matt Anderson.
And I am Ben DiBono, and we are back.
For another episode of the Sci-Fi Christian. Yeah. Here talking about comics. And why are we talking about comics, Ben?
Because they suck!
A lot of people have been saying, hey, get back to theology. Yeah. Why are you focusing so much on superheroes? Here's what the deal is. These things have been in my mind. These conversations we've been having on the show are developing naturally from real conversations you and I have been having. So I thought we can just get this stuff out there. And I think next week we'll hit a good theological episode.
Well, we're going to get theological this week.
Yeah, no kidding. So don't worry, we try to tie it in.
I've got stuff from Thomas Aquinas.
Yeah, definitely.
Because he was a great comic book writer back in the... No, he wasn't.
And this is actually good timing that we're doing this episode this week, because Comic-Con is this weekend. Actually, tomorrow is... Yeah. As we record this on a Tuesday, tomorrow is Wednesday, Preview Wednesday. The real event starts on Thursday, but... oh, man. I just had an idea, too, about a week ago, that what if for my bachelor party I had... You know, got a select group of guys that would be willing to pay, and we went to Comic-Con for my bachelor party. How sweet would that have been?
You know, we used to talk about going to Comic-Con someday.
No, we're still going.
I think I would hate it.
Oh, now you would. Why would it? Why would
because
you?
Because I hate lots of people in one place at one time.
Oh, okay. I still want to go.
Yeah, I would go for you.
I think about it every single year now.
Could we cosplay?
No, I wouldn't want to cosplay. I'd wear a t-shirt that's like superhero-ish, but I wouldn't cosplay.
If we went and you cosplayed as me and I cosplayed as you?
Yeah, that's about where I would go. I'm really against cosplaying because my sister is so into anime and like the whole anime convention business. I just I can't get behind it on principle.
What if we cosplayed as like somebody with two heads and we could do one costume together?
No. No, I don't want to do that.
I don't want to.
But yeah, so Comic-Con's this weekend. So we had a kind of a short news episode in the last episode.
Yeah.
I think next week might be supersized if there's enough Comic-Con news. So yeah, we'll see.
I've been forgetting to do video game news. So sorry, everyone.
Hey, have you ever played Star Wars Battlefront for PlayStation 2?
Yeah, it's fun.
I found it and I've never played it. It was given to me by one of my old youth kids when I was a youth director.
It's a good time.
He was done with it and he said, "Here, check it out." So if you want to play sometime, I found it.
I'd be happy.
You came here last week to play Turtles in Time.
I did. That was a blast. Speaking of video games, Steam Summer Sale on now.
What is it? What did you say?
Are you familiar with Steam.com?
No.
Okay. Well, they're having their summer sale.
What is Steam.com?
They're a video game download site.
Interesting. Okay, cool. Well,
it'll probably be over by the time people are listening to this.
Yeah, so this one, I don't know when this will be up, but... let's go to the main topic. We're going to be talking...
We don't know if you have to edit anything yet.
That's true. Here we go. All right. Here's the deal, folks. I've been learning more about the comic industry through this show.
Yeah.
So I've been following comic storylines. I've been reading comic graphic novels here and there just to stay up to date on storylines. I probably hear more than I actually experience for myself, because I'll listen to podcasts that we'll discuss, I'll read news, and the more and more I learn about it, the more I think they're not doing something right.
I agree.
And I still, so as a differently from Ben, I actually still like superhero comics, so I'm not against them.
Yeah.
I just think that there's a lot of options that they're not taking chances with.
See, and I wish I could like superhero comics, but I just can't. And in fact, I'm pretty much at that point with superheroes in general. I would love to love superheroes, but there's not a whole lot that's lovable about them in their current incarnation, whether it be in comics or movies.
Okay.
I've just had enough. So I have had enough.
I just want to be clear at the front end of this show, though. This is not going to be a negative episode where we just talk bad about...
What?
Just listen, from my perspective, I'm not going to just talk bad about superheroes the whole time. I like them. I'm just... I'm giving, as a fan, I'm giving some suggestions to whoever wants to hear them, maybe somebody famous, maybe somebody who is in a position of power, of some possibilities of what we could do to, one, change comic books in general, and you wanted to add on superhero movies.
Yeah.
I don't feel as strongly about that, although I did come up with some points we could talk about, but I definitely think there's some untapped potential in comic books.
Yeah.
And superhero stories there that I'd like to go through. So
I agree. And we're talking specifically superhero comics, not because I think there are, we both would agree there's some really good comics out there.
So superhero comics specifically. So some of these points, maybe we'll say a few words about, and some maybe we'll talk more at length about. So it's not going to be a countdown. Let's just go back and forth, and I'll let you start. Let's start with comic books, because that's what got me thinking about this. And I do feel a little upset about some things, but not to the point where I hate them like you. You hate them.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have stuff for comics. I have stuff for movies. But then I have my heavy hitters.
Okay.
The big mamas are going to come in at the end.
All right. I'm ready.
To apply for both. Okay.
Okay.
So first thing that comics need to do, forget continuity.
Oh, my gosh.
Enough.
Okay. This point is the reason I want to do this whole episode. So this, this would have been my introductory point as well. Okay, you can start, and then I got some things.
One of the things I'm going to talk about, you know, for the big mamas, so just, maybe I shouldn't call them that. That sounds a little weird.
I don't think that's bad. It's
it's not bad. It's just a little weird.
Okay, we can call it something else, like your main points. Like your strongest points of
the
argument.
The big fellas, is that the superheroes need to, they have the potential to fill the mythological need in contemporary society the way that actual mythologies did back in the day. But one of the things is that you can't get too hung up on continuity. It's like, you know, when Homer sits down to write down the Odyssey, he's not worrying about, well, does this technically contradict what Zeus did in that other poem that the guy wrote last week? And I understand it's a different world and that it's different when it's one company. But if you're going to really embrace the potential, you can't get so hung up on continuity. I'm not saying you throw it all out the window, but it can't get so hung up on it that you're boxing yourself in from telling genuinely good stories.
Agree. And I think where I started to become enlightened to this point is when we started to ask listeners and talk amongst ourselves about some of the strongest storylines that are out there. And when we were having to recommend books, I started to find that the books that we were recommending were outside of continuity. They're just standalone stories that were good on their own. You didn't need to know a ton to jump in. It wrapped itself up pretty well. Yes, this point is good. And so some ideas that I've had about this is, what if they... Now, I don't think it's realistic to believe that all stories can be out of continuity.
Right.
But what if they put some sort of time spans on storylines? Or so, for example, we know that DC's done the Crisis event. It happened in the 80s. It happens every now and then where they kind of reboot. Sometimes it's a soft reboot. Sometimes it's a hard reboot. But one way or another, they give their fans a kind of a jumping on point. So I used to, early in the show, I would argue that stupid Marvel stuck to their guns all the way through, and that makes Marvel better. But I disagree now.
Yeah.
I think
isn't it fun to debate with yourself?
Yeah, I just feel like in some areas of the Marvel universe, specifically the X-Men come to mind, it's so hard to get into an X-Men book right now because there are multiple characters with multiple histories that go back to the 60s, a lot of these characters. It is not a place where you can jump in and just really get into the action. And comics don't start the same way as TV shows do, where you can say previously on and then explain what you need to know. You basically just have to hope for the best. And early editors used to say you have to treat every comic book as if it's somebody's first comic book. And I don't think people nowadays are sticking to that.
No. No, it's the equivalent of if you had 100 different TV shows that have been running for 50 years and they're still running today. And to really understand what's going on in one, you have to at least have a working knowledge of the other 99. Mm-hmm. You just can't do it.
Exactly.
Not enough time. And eventually it's going to bite them in the butt because you have some people who jumped in back when you could keep up on stuff, and they've kept up at least on enough of it so that they can read their favorite books or whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, eventually, you're going to have people of our age who haven't been keeping up with all this, or younger, and because the longer this goes on, the harder it's going to be. And so eventually, your clientele is going to get so frustrated that they might want to read comic books, but they're not going to because they can't figure out what's going on.
And I want to continue to talk about continuity and then bring on another point that I had, which is that stories need a definitive ending.
I agree.
Because
what
we're seeing right now is they go from one big event to the next. And I tried to get a timeline of all the different Marvel events. And there are websites are having a hard time doing it because they don't know what to consider a major event and a minor event. And it feels like if you're looking at the years, some of the events overlap.
Yeah.
It's basically just one era over next. DC right now is not in that boat because they recently rebooted. And so they're kind of coming up on their first big event right now in 2 years. So that's pretty admirable for comics.
Yeah.
Marvel, on the other hand, one after another, right, nonstop. So we need definitive ends to stories. You can't really allow a title to run for 50 years and expect readers to understand this vast history of each character.
Right.
Think about like TV shows. Like you were just saying that. Like it would be how you couldn't expect somebody to know everything about 50 years of a TV show and still and just be able to jump in. Like what Lost, for example, that was 6 years, and if you missed even one episode,
you were done.
You're done. So why do comics think that they can keep going and not have some sort of end to stories?
Right. Right, it's just ridiculous. And so whether it's a specific end to a book or you want to do it storyline by storyline or even creative team by creative team, you know, when you hire on a new creative team, negotiate what their run is going to be. Mm-hmm. And it's not that there's no wiggle room for anything like that, you know, but negotiate that, okay, you, Grant Morrison, you're going to write Batman for 50 issues.
This is one of my points. Yeah. Another point I have here is contract one writer or one creative team for a long run of stories so they can plan things out ahead of time.
Right.
Because what you have right now happening is somebody, you know, a book will start and they'll get somebody big on, and they'll only be on for 6 to 12 issues just to get through that first year or so. And then all of a sudden somebody else's jumps on and they have a whole different direction they want to take the book. And so things are dropped from, plot points are just left behind and hanging there. Yeah, creative teams. If you can hook somebody for, you know, if you look at some of the best books, they're ones that have had creative teams that have lasted for a long time.
Yeah. Or even like, the perfect example would be when Joss Whedon did Astonishing X-Men, mm-hmm. where he did 2 years, I think. He had 24 issues or whatever. Well, that book kept going after he left. And, okay, if you want to use the brand name or whatever to keep selling the book, I get that from a marketing standpoint. But let him have his run and then just end that story. There was no need for him to, you know, we got to make sure he has some plot points that don't get resolved so the book can keep going. No, let him tell his story, let it be done, and then somebody else can write under the Astonishing X-Men label, but let them tell their own story.
Is that what happened? I felt like Astonishing X-Men did end in a good way. Did it?
Well, mostly, but there's some stuff, especially with Kitty Pryde mm-hmm. at the end, where it's not resolved.
Okay. Do you feel, I would probably go as far as to say, when it comes to this vast history that we were just talking about, I think you can enjoy a character if you're just getting to know them and you're learning about them as you're first jumping onto a book. But I think I would go as far as to say it's impossible to fully enjoy a character if you don't know their history.
I agree.
Because how are you don't necessarily know all the nuances of why this is affecting them the way it is if you don't know everything that's happened to them. So with these 50-year continuities, you're losing a lot of, like the writers might know, oh, this is a great point because think of what happened in the 80s with this. Yeah. But a new reader is not going to get that.
Even another side point alongside that. That was redundant, I guess. Even if you do know the history, I think you're going to struggle because Batman's in like 700 books a month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Wolverine's.
Well, let's save that. We can talk about it now, but I think that's another problem with comics right now.
Yeah, I would say you need to set a hard limit on the number of books a character can be in on a monthly basis.
You and I are totally on the same page.
Wow. Yeah. We did not write these notes together.
Yes, cap the number of books that each character can appear in, whether it's, you know, maybe it's one single book and one team book. But when I first started reading Spider-Man, these were the titles that existed. Just regular Spider-Man, Spectacular Spider-Man, Web of Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man. So that's four.
Yeah.
Right now, Spider-Man is in the Avengers. He was recently in the new Fantastic Four called the Future Foundation. Of course, he was in his own book. He has a new book called Avenging Spider-Man, which is essentially a team-up book. So every storyline, he teams up with a different character. So that creates another problem because this other character who has a storyline in a different book, now how are they also in his team-up book? Yes.
And you're not even talking about miniseries. that are going.
These are just ongoing.
Yeah, because like when I was reading comics back 5, 6, 7 years ago, I was trying to read Batman. Batman was the character. I would read some others, but Batman was the character I was focused on. So I had the same thing. There was, you know, four main books or whatever. But then there was also two or three miniseries going on. And then there was all the back issues of all of these. And I was so stressed out from trying to read Batman that I hated it.
Yep. Yeah. Right now they have Dark Knight.
Yep.
They have regular, just Batman.
Yep.
They have Batman and Robin.
Yep.
Batman Incorporated.
Detective Comics.
Detective Comics. And he's in Justice League. Yep. And for a while he was in Justice League International.
Yep.
Plus the Bat Family books, Batwing, Nightwing, Batgirl, Catwoman, Birds of Prey. You know, he's not necessarily in all those books, but he makes appearances.
That's why, even if you were to, you know, Matrix style, you just inject the complete history of Batman into my head, and I know it instantly. So I know everything about every story up to this point. It would still be really stressful to try and jump in right now, because, you know, I would want to read all the Batman books, and I can't. You know, it's the time commitment, it's the money commitment, it's all that.
And you can't have it both ways. You can't say, I want continuity to stay solid and say this character can exist in three different places at the same time.
Right.
You can't do it that way. Wolverine's another one. He's in the Avengers. He's in multiple versions of the X-Men currently. He's in his own single book. It's great. I think Deadpool, I don't know Deadpool that well, but I've heard he's in a lot of books. Superman, of course, has two of his own books, plus Action Comics, plus Justice League. So your point,
nuts.
While we're on the line of thinking when it comes to capping number of books, so like we've already said, you want to cap the number of books each character can be in. I think they should actually put a limit to the amount of books that they sell per month.
Oh, I agree.
Because I have no idea how many stories are out there in Marvel.
Yeah.
I'm talking about superheroes here. Of course, if they want to go some interesting other directions, that's fine. But just superheroes in this one universe, I think they have 80 plus.
Yeah.
DC, they did this. So DC, I feel like, is doing some things right now. They're at 52.
Yeah, but the fact that that's doing some things right tells you something there.
52 books. And so what they've been doing is when they take out, let's say they want to cancel four, they'll cancel them and bring four new ones in. So
at least they have a limit.
Yeah, at least they have a limit. I know it's still a lot, but and you, like you said, they'll have miniseries still happen. They have other books that, like Batman Beyond, that's not in the new 52 universe.
Yeah.
So they can sell Batman Beyond outside of that 52 books. But so the 52 books I'm talking about, they're inside continuity.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of a good idea to just have a limit. So at least you know what you're dealing with, whereas Marvel is all over the place.
Yeah, I remember back, though, you know, even though it's better, it's not enough. Because I remember back when the new 52 was announced, you and I briefly talked about, should we try and read all of the number ones?
Yeah.
And there's like 5 seconds where, you know, I kind of think, that's an awesome idea.
Yeah.
And then I realize, no, there's no way that we can commit to that. It's just, even for 1 month, the expense, number one, and then number two, the time is just crazy.
Oh, would you rather see, let's say that they put a limit, would you rather have it be each character can be allowed one single book and one team book, or a character can only appear in one book, period?
I'd say every character can be, you know, one team, one, you know, whatever you want to do, one, two, something like that. But keep it small, keep it manageable. I think you want to craft it, because I don't think most people are going to sit down and want to read every single book Marvel or DC publishes. But you're going to have people who would say, I want to read everything Batman's in.
Yeah.
So make it manageable for that person. I think, you know, 3-4 a month at the most.
Yeah.
That's at least manageable at that point.
I wasn't reading comic books at this time, but when the Ultimate Universe first came out, they had, I think, 3 or 4 books total in the whole line of Ultimate. So this is, the Ultimate Universe is the Marvel Universe, but a different version. So it was like an alternate reality where they were able to start to tell some of these old classic stories in new and modern ways. So I think it's an awesome idea. Started in 2001, I believe. We're already starting to see now, it hasn't been that long, but we're starting to see that disintegrate in the sense that it's super convoluted now. So some things that they did that were good was they had a limited number of titles. Characters didn't appear in multiple books. Deaths counted, which is another one of my points, is that deaths should stick.
I agree.
Dead is Dead. But
what's the next one that I have?
Let's come back to that in a second. But what I want to say about this Ultimate Universe is this is basically proof of concept that something is wrong. Because
yes,
you see that it was working fine, but then they're trying to expand it. They're adding more and more titles. You're losing track of it now. You don't know who all the characters are anymore. And the Brian Michael Bendis, who is one of the creative minds behind all of Marvel right now,
right,
he was once quoted as saying, you'll know that I've run out of ideas in the Ultimate Universe when I bring the original universe and the Ultimate Universe together. And so last year they had a well-received Spider-Man crossover where both the regular 616 Marvel Spider-Man and the Ultimate Spider-Man had a team-up. So that was well-received. But now, in this most recent event, this is a little bit spoiler if you're a current reader, the most recent event they had was called Age of Ultron. Are you familiar with this?
Nope.
It ended with, and again, this is your spoiler warning, it ended with the time stream being shattered because of too much time travel, and it messed up the parallel universes, and it's starting to bring pieces of the Ultimate Universe and the 616 universe together.
If I was an Ultimate fan who had started at the beginning,
yeah,
and kept up with it even though it got more complex, I would be so angry right now because it's like, you know, I went with you. I started with your new continuity. I said, this is going to be my comics universe. And now you're bringing in all this 50 years of continuity. So the exact same thing I went to Ultimate to avoid,
yes,
is now here.
Yeah. So that's why I'm saying this is proof of concept that it doesn't work, because yeah, I think they should have just stopped maybe 5 years in or 10 years in.
Yeah.
And then started something different. Like just have, let Ultimate Universe live there. And maybe if eventually a writer wants to go back and tell a few stories, that's fine. But don't have it be a monthly thing anymore. Same thing with 616. There's still a part of me that loves the 616 universe, which is the regular Marvel universe, but it's just been on for too long. I'd really like to see them say everything's new. Even with DC, when they rebooted, they still kept a lot of things the same. Like, yeah, they couldn't change Batman. They couldn't change Green Lantern. Too many important things have happened. So, and like well-liked stories, it just would have made too many people mad. So I want totally new. I want both companies to just totally start over and stop messing around. Don't do halfway reboots, all the way.
Yeah, yeah.
This is my biggest point. I feel so strongly about this right now.
Yeah, and you know, even if they feel like, oh, people just don't want to read endless origin stories, well, skip the origin stories.
Yeah.
You know, just jump in with stories and just say they're in a new continuity. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to maintain big events. You know, for example, you're not going to change the fact that Bruce Wayne's parents are dead. You know, you're not going to change. There's some continuity things that are going to be there because mm-hmm. they're just part of the mythology. But we're not going to worry about making sure every last little event lines up. You know, we're not going to worry. You don't have to worry about that. You can pick up this Batman story, and as long as you know the basics of who Batman is, you're going
to
be good.
Yeah, you could definitely do that. And right, if you want to go back to one of the old universe, like let's say we spend 5 years in a new universe, they're like, okay, good work, everybody, starting over. But 15 years later, somebody wants to say, oh, there was a thing there that was interesting, let's go back to that. Fine, do it. Just have a graphic novel that tackles that. And it's just like right now when they have Elseworlds. DC does this really well. They have Elseworlds books that are, they build a new universe and they tell a short 6-issue story. Marvel does kind of a what if. What if this one little thing was different?
Right.
That's an interesting idea, but not as powerful as an ongoing storyline like DC has done. So again, I think I have to give the point to DC on this one. So
I agree.
Let's talk about Dead is Dead.
Yeah. Well, what I said is that you really have to do one of two things. You either need to make deaths real, Dead is Dead, or just stop killing characters.
Yeah.
If you don't have, you know, the big brass ones to actually keep a character dead, don't kill him.
Yeah, there's no stakes then.
Yeah. Now, this goes along with the continuity thing, though, because like, you know, we have the death of Superman in the 90s. Well, obviously, DC's going to publish future Superman stories. So that's not going to work if we just have this one ongoing universe that's going to last till Kingdom Come.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, you have in DC.
Wait, was that, did you mean literally the storyline Kingdom Come?
No,
or just like
I meant,
forever?
Yeah, okay. I meant it more in a colloquial sense.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that's not going to work with the current continuity mindset. But if we say we're loose on continuity, you know, this Superman story stands alone. It may or may not tie into other continuity. And now Superman dies at the end of it. Well, you can have another Superman story that starts up next month.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't take away from the power of that one because it's a different story.
Yes.
And so Superman dies in this story.
Yeah. I like it. I think from now on, this is not going to happen, but from now on, if you kill a character, they stay dead. No yes. more let them come back in a year or 2 years. Dead is dead.
I agree.
All right. My next point is take big risks, and that ties in with the killing characters. Take risks in storytelling and don't try to be so safe, because back in the 60s in TV shows a lot, we've talked about like Star Trek, the original series, they could tell interesting stories, but we knew that at the end of the episodes, things had to reset so that if you missed that episode, when you got back to the new one, everything was status quo as is. Right. And I feel like even though superhero comics, they sometimes tell big epic in quote stories, they ultimately want to get back to the status quo. Yeah, where all the characters are in their different place. Some are in the Avengers, some are in the X-Men, some are good, some are bad. There's no big waves of change that happen. Even though we've seen big stories and big interesting stories, nothing is really changing. We've had status quo for years and years, and even in universes are changing in DC.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree.
I have some thoughts that I want to touch on, but why do you think these companies aren't taking bigger risks?
Well, from a comic standpoint, the first inclination would be that they're making money, but I don't know that they are necessarily making tons and tons of money from the comics. I wonder if part of it is because they're not necessarily doing great at attracting new readers. Mm-hmm. And if a big risk fails, we may not attract new readers, and we just lost the old readers too, and now we're sunk.
We should talk about later, if we think of it, how can they attract new readers? But I don't have notes on that, just if it comes up in conversation.
Yeah.
Do you have any ideas off the top of your head?
Well, I think we're talking about it.
So that's basically
yeah.
it. Okay.
Yeah, I think a lot of what we're talking about is accessibility issues.
Yeah. All right. So some ideas I had on what could be the reason behind these lack of big changes. As I was writing my notes, I actually just this week came out, a quote that I wanted to read. So I think part of it might be that there's other powers that are over some of the decision making right now. It's not just the editor in chief. We've got movie industry.
Right.
We've got merchandising people, other corporate entities that are dictating what happens in stories. And so to kind of prove this point, have you heard of the name George Perez?
I think I've heard the name. I don't know.
Pretty well-known artist in comics. He is the guy maybe most well-known for doing Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Mm-hmm.
So him and Marv Wolfman together were kind of the brains behind that operation. Okay, so he just recently signed a contract, but not with one of the big two, not Marvel or DC. It's some smaller company called Boom Studios.
Oh.
Almost like BAM Studios.
Oh, there you go.
Okay, and his quote is so interesting, especially given our conversation. When asked about why he made this choice, he said, "Well, while I've enjoyed considerable professional and personal success with both Marvel and DC, it was becoming all too evident that many of the books being produced by both companies seemed to be getting more and more corporate-driven. Many of the characters I grew up with were turning into strangers whose adventures were determined by factors that had less and less to do with what made a good comic story and more to do with how these properties can be exploited for other purposes. There's nothing wrong with that, I guess, but not something that I felt was particularly satisfying for me as a storyteller."
I agree. George is right.
George is right.
Yes.
So I think it's, on one hand, we're kind of glad that we're seeing these heroes finally in TV and movies and they're becoming more mainstream popular, but it's actually hurting
yes.
the original source material.
That's true. I'm not sure that I'm glad anymore, but we'll get to that when we get to the movies.
All right. I have only one more point on the comics end. Do you have any more points?
I have one more point on the comics end as well.
Go ahead.
Make room for new characters instead of changing existing ones.
That's a good idea.
And what I mean by this is, like, there's this big hullabaloo about, I think it was in the Ultimate Universe, where the new Spider-Man was African-American.
Yes.
Or something like that. And so it's like becomes this big deal about, you know, now we have an African-American Spider-Man, and this becomes a huge controversy then. Well, just make a new character. Be creative and invent a new character who's African-American and who can be, for contemporary audiences and contemporary kids what Peter Parker was for so long. Doesn't mean you get rid of Peter Parker, but instead of changing the existing character and creating a whole bunch of needless controversy and getting into tons of fights about political correctness and all that, which is just stupid and a waste of everybody's time, channel that energy into making new characters who appeal to those new demographics. Call up Stan Lee, marketing genius.
Yeah.
Yeah, he knows what to do with that.
That's a great idea. Yeah. That's a really good one. My last one isn't as good as that, actually, and we've already kind of touched on it, but I feel like they're too much event-driven.
Oh, yeah.
And so it used to be that maybe every summer you get a short event. This is years ago. But then throughout the year, you could have some single-issue stories. Oh, I just thought of another thing. They write... There's a term called writing for the trade. And so instead of writing single issue great stories, every story now has to be spread out into six issues so that they can release a six issue trade paperback. And so that goes hand in hand with this point. So first, in one hand, they're writing for the trade so that they are unnecessarily making stories longer.
Yeah.
Which oversaturation. Uh-huh. It's like making a movie that should be an hour and a half into 2.5 hours.
Well, we'll get there.
Yeah. And so that's one bad thing. And then also, it's like they have to have not just a nice six-part event, but now it's eight-part event or 12-part event. And there can be one in the spring, one in the summer, one in the fall. Some can be minor events. Some can be major universe-wide events. And so, like I said, I kind of tried to look up a timeline, but it's almost impossible to read through these just because there's one after another after another. And even when they try to say it's not an event, they kind of give it a brand title. So for a while in Marvel, there was Dark Reign, which was not an event. It was just the status quo, kind of, but it was still, they branded it as something. Or do you remember Heroic Age that came up?
Yeah. I do not.
Yeah, so there was all these different things. We recently had Avengers versus X-Men. Man, it's just, you have to limit this, because if every, so with these events, they're making people think something important is going to happen. And when important things don't happen, it just, they're losing their power, losing their influence, and when us believing that they're telling the truth, that this is going to be big. And so then we're buying less as readers because we don't trust them anymore. I'm trying to think of what... They're losing their leverage. Yeah, because they have leverage if they use these events wisely. But when there's one after another, people are just going to not trust them anymore. So too many events.
Can I give you a comparison that you may or may not appreciate?
Yeah.
It's similar to like the way that they would market series finales on Lost for the earlier seasons. All will be revealed. No, it won't, because it's only season 4 and you have to do seasons 5 and 6.
Yeah, whatever.
It's true.
things were revealed.
which ones?
We can't be specific about Lost right now. Should we move on to movies?
Let's do it. That's a nice segue.
All right. So why don't you leave this one? Because I have less points about the movies. I felt really strongly about the comic books, and I feel good to get that off my chest. So go ahead. Now you feel strongly about movies.
I do. And I should say that even though we're talking specific superheroes, I want to extend these points to blockbusters as a whole. Blockbusters as a whole.
Okay.
And lest anyone think that I'm being overly biased, a couple of these points even apply to my guy, Christopher Nolan.
Okay.
So
good.
Even he's on the whipping block, so to speak, in the wrath of Ben.
All right. You take one, then I've got one, and then I think it's going to be more of an open discussion.
Number one, cut budgets in half.
Whoa.
Budgets, and now that's a bit arbitrary because I don't understand everything that goes into budgets. So I want to make that clear. So maybe it would be cut budgets by a quarter or something, but cut budgets in half sounds better. So we're going with that.
And why do you think this?
Well, okay. Movies were made at one point without $200 million budgets. And I, in my opinion, when you can just throw money at the screen, that's easier than sitting down and figuring out a good story. It's easier to make cool CGI scenes than it is to make a compelling character arc. That's hard to do. It really is. And in fact, there was an interesting article in IO9 a couple months back written by a screenwriter who was saying, I use action scenes when I need to fill space in my script.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And talking about how this is an industry thing. And it's because you have these huge budgets, and we can say, well, you know, let's just spend $20 million on this action scene. Mm-hmm. Because that's easier than sitting down and figuring out 20 minutes of content that's actually going to be compelling and fit the story. So if you slash budgets dramatically and say, no, we're not going to do 2 hours of CGI. This is your CGI budget. And in fact, I would go so far as to say set a hard percentage on what amount can be used on special effects. Wow, you know, yeah. So even if, okay, the movie does need a $200 million budget for some reason. And again, this is arbitrary number. 25% of that can be used on special effects mm-hmm. only. Yeah.
And you think that when they're limited in this area, they're forced to tell a better story?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, because I do think that lazy storytelling results from being able to distract people with big explosions.
So I'm not sure if this ties in exactly what you're saying, but I feel like of the three big movies from this summer that we've seen so far, Iron Man 3,
yep.
Star Trek Into Darkness,
yep.
and Man of Steel, I enjoyed, well, the last two, not Iron Man 3 as much, but I enjoyed them. And felt pretty strongly about them after I left. But as time has passed, I've felt less about them.
I agree.
Whereas there's other movies that I, like Dark Knight, liked it. And then later I loved it.
Yeah. Because there was stuff in Dark Knight that you had to think about that doesn't click for you the instant you leave the theater.
I think Man of Steel has the most chance of being something where I could go back to and maybe get some more from it. I love Star Trek in general.
Yeah.
But I don't. I think I like this less now. I don't know why. I'm not sure what changed in me, but I feel like they're just lessening in value to me since I've left them.
Yeah. I mean, even with Man of Steel, I think the first half of that movie is brilliant. Mm-hmm. I would give the first half of that movie 5 stars, and I feel as strongly about that as I did when we left the theater. Mm-hmm. But the second half or the third act or whenever, you know, the action scenes start up and seem to don't stop, that's like a 2.5-star movie from that point on. It takes such a dramatic shift because we stop telling a compelling story about what it's like to be Clark Kent in this alien world and figuring himself out, and it starts beginning, let's see how many buildings we can blow up.
I'm going to move on to my point, if that's okay.
Go for it.
Do you have anything else you want to say about that?
Not on that one.
I started teasing this a little bit in the last episode, but sequels.
Yeah.
I don't want any more screenwriters writing for the sequel. So just like writing for the trade, don't write for the sequel. So tell a good story in the time that you're given. And Christopher Nolan, I'm not going to keep going back to him as like the guy that does everything right. But I know for a fact, Batman Begins, he wrote that as if it was going to be the only Batman movie he could tell.
Right.
When he got to Dark Knight, he felt kind of happy that he was able to do another Batman movie. And he told that story in completion as if he never did another Batman movie, he felt satisfied with the way that ended.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he did get the third one. And he said up front, I only want to do one last one. And so then he puts everything into this last one. He's not leaving any dangling plot points so that somebody else can pick up the storyline. So I like when each movie can stand on its own 2 feet. It can be powerful by itself. You can see a complete story arc within one movie. Whereas you have a movie like Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Where that movie is all about setting up future movies.
Right.
It's all about money making, which I'm not trying to argue that studios shouldn't want to make money, but you can do it with good story.
Exactly.
And so Amazing Spider-Man loses so much because you have a lot of potential there, but instead they're worrying so much about the future movies that that's taken away from the story that it could tell by itself. And so you aren't leaving that movie feeling like that was a really powerful story where we saw some great character development and a great story arc, because it's in process. And yeah. So now you want somebody to sit through, well, if you think about putting them all together, then you're making somebody sit through a 6-hour movie to get your story.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, with Amazing Spider-Man, I just watched that a couple months ago. So in my mind, you talk about the three big movies of the summer. That one kind of gets mixed there in there with me, too,
because I just watched it. Yeah.
And it is total setup for the franchise. And I left that one feeling like, I don't even know if I want to see the next one. Mm-hmm. Whereas Batman Begins is self-contained. It was meant to be its own deal, but I would have been really disappointed if we never saw the next, because it made you want to see more by the virtue of telling a great story.
And I'm turned off by the fact that I know that now they've booked dates for Spider-Man 3 and 4. They don't even know how 2 is going to be received.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's all about, they know they're going to make money on it.
Yeah.
And Avengers, I love Avengers. So I love the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but I have to say, Iron Man 1 strong, And then after that, you kind of can tell, oh, they realized this Avengers thing is going to work out. Iron Man did great.
Yeah.
Because I think at that point, they weren't sure that the Avengers Initiative, this phase one, didn't have that name at that point. They didn't know it was going to work. So once they realized, okay, Iron Man was a hit, Robert Downey Jr. is going to be able to make this happen. And so then every movie after that, Incredible Hulk, still to a lesser extent, but then when we get to Iron Man 2, it's really heavy. Iron Man 2, Thor, Captain America, all these movies could be good, but instead they're lacking because they're essentially just setting up the next Avengers movie. And Avengers, interestingly, really could be considered a sequel to all of these movies. It's a sequel to Incredible Hulk. It's a sequel to Iron Man 2, to Thor, to Captain America. And I don't know that that's a good thing.
No. Well, because Captain America, if you think about it, that movie exists to get Steve Rogers into contemporary New York.
Mm-hmm.
That's why that movie exists.
Mm-hmm.
There's no other reason for the plot in that movie. Everything is about, you know, where that movie's going to end up so that we can do Avengers.
Yeah, and even with the weapon is from Captain America. So,
right.
So even though I love those movies, I tend to love them, I can see that they're not strong in the sense that they're just used to get to the next movie. And I don't want that anymore. I want great movies that stand alone. So that's why I'm hoping when I see Captain America next year, the second one, I'm hoping that that one won't just be set up for Avengers 2.
It will be. Because studios have not.
I don't have a ton of hope for Thor Dark World. I'll see it. I don't have a ton of hope for it. But I do still believe in the first Avenger. And so...
You liked Captain America far more than it deserved to be liked.
I almost wonder if because Guardians of the Galaxy is so out there and so weird and so its own thing...
It could be better than these.
It might be better.
Yeah.
Because I don't think those characters are going to transition to Avengers 2.
No.
Just elements from that story are going to impact Avengers 2.
Right.
So we could end up saying that Guardians of the Galaxy is the best movie in Phase 2.
Could be.
So, no more sequel. I'm okay with sequels as long as you're not writing a story for the sequel.
Let every movie be its own movie.
That's a better way to put it. Yeah. Let every movie be its own movie.
In addition to cutting budgets, we also need to cut runtime. Here's what I would say. If I was the executive producer of all these movies, I would tell my director, bring me a two-hour cut. If you say, I need more time than that, I don't care. Bring me a two-hour cut. And then we sit down and watch a two-hour cut. If it needs more time, you justify every minute that it needs over that 2 hours from a story standpoint. In other words, if you want to go longer than 2 hours, you have to justify it that the story needs more than 2 hours.
Our fans have been reacting and commenting and agreeing with you because you talked about this.
I was a little surprised.
Yeah, you talked about this last week, I believed. And we had people on Facebook remembering back when theaters did mandate this because they had the 7-9 movie, the 9-11. You had to, 5-7, you had to fit into that time slot because right now we have megaplexes. They don't really use that term anymore, but a multiplex where you have multiple, maybe 16 theaters in one. But before, there was maybe one or two screens. And so you had to be, precise with your timing.
Speaking of megaplexes, have you been to the Coon Rapids Theater recently over here?
Well, this won't apply very well to the...
I know, but I just wanted to bring it up.
I know what you're getting at. In a local theater here, they just added recliners.
Yeah, we took the kids to Monsters University. It was, like, awesome.
I haven't been there. I haven't.
Okay, I'm not sure how it makes sense for them because there's about 5 seats in every theater now because they're huge.
They've reduced by 40%. So 40% less people can fit in the theaters now.
Yeah.
But they're thinking that more people will go for the experience.
I would have loved if we'd gone to see Iron Man 3 there because I tried to fall asleep in Iron Man 3 and I couldn't do it. I genuinely did. I was so bored. I just tried to fall asleep for the rest of the movie. And here it was like, I wound up liking Monsters University for the most part. But I was like, okay, if I wind up hating this movie, I'm just going to go to sleep because this is so comfortable.
I loved Monsters University. I know we're not talking about that right now, but it might end up being my favorite movie this summer.
Well, it could be. It was better than the other three. But
yeah, I think it was better than the other three. I can't think of anything better.
Well, my favorite movie would be the first half of Man of Steel. Okay. I'm isolating that as its own movie. In fact, maybe I'll get the DVD and just turn it off after once General Zod comes
through. So 2 hours.
2 hours. And if you go over that and say, well, I couldn't do it, Producer Ben. I'm sorry. I'm 2.5 hour cut. Well, guess what you have to cut? You have to cut action scenes to get down to 2 hours.
All right.
Yeah, so good. I'd be ruthless.
I do have some more points here. Sorry, I misled you earlier.
Oh my.
The last 2 points you've made have been broad for most movies.
Yes.
This one is specific to superheroes. I'm just going to put it like this. When you try to please everybody, you please nobody.
I agree.
So
that's why I don't care about making you guys happy out there. I care about making me and Matt happy here. Because if we entertain ourselves, you'll probably be entertained, but not all of you, and I'm okay with that.
Wow. Okay, well, here's what I mean when
I love you guys.
Here's what I mean in regards to superheroes. I think that for each movie...
Stop insulting our fans. Stop insulting our fans.
Stop, Ben. For each movie, the studio needs to decide up front, are we going to be catering to the hardcore, diehard fans?
Yeah.
Or are we going to be catering to an audience that we're trying to introduce this hero to?
Yeah.
You can't do both. It's been proven impossible. You can't... I mean, you're going to try... Somebody listening is going to say, no, they've been able to do it. They made the mainstream audience happy and they made the fans happy. But that's not true because we're seeing that... that these movies have been lacking. So I think the Marvel movies try to straddle the fence. The Nolan movies, he was not catering to diehard fans. He was catering to an audience that would possibly be new to this character, Batman.
Right.
So I'm open to hearing your arguments, but I don't believe that there's any movie that successfully straddled the fence. I think you have to pick one or the other.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think in Nolan's case, I don't know that I would say he's even trying to cater to new fans. I think he was just saying, let's just tell the best Batman story we can. And if diehard fans like it, great. If they don't, they don't. If new fans like it, great. If they don't, they don't. He's just going to tell the best story he can.
I think I could accept that as well. But I don't believe that he was in any way trying to really connect with the DC comics audience.
Yeah, this wasn't, let's be faithful to everything in Batman continuity.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Now, we've been giving a lot of love to Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
You want to know one point that I will take him out back and give him a whooping on?
Yes.
Stop being spoiler phobic.
Stop being spoiler phobic.
This whole deal, and he and J.J. Abrams are the two biggest offenders on this.
Okay.
Of you can't let anything about your movies be known ahead of time. You know what? If your movie can't stand up to spoilers, it's not a good movie.
Okay, here's where I'll argue with you about this. And I don't feel as strongly as I once did.
Yeah.
But I believe if they're trying to protect the audience, then that's noble in a sense. Because, sure, maybe it can hold up with spoilers, but why ruin a story point that could be fun for the audience to experience?
Because that's such an... If you think about stories as a historical phenomenon, the whole spoiler thing is such a recent... occurrence. Like, I've been rereading the Iliad and the Odyssey. Well, Homer's audience, I mean, these were oral traditions before they were written down, so everybody knew these stories going in. Mm-hmm. You just knew. It's a bit like opening up the Bible and, oh, Jesus comes back, spoiler alert! which I heard a joke about that next time somebody says, comes to your door and is like, can I talk to you about how Jesus died for your sins? You go, hey, I was reading that book. Spoiler alert. Slam the door in their face.
Yeah, so, that's good. I like that.
Yeah. So, but the whole point of these stories isn't that you don't know what's going on. It's that you do know what's going on and you immerse yourself in the story and discover new things, not from, oh, I got to know what happens next, but because you're enjoying the story on a deeper level. I experienced this for myself when I was just rereading Game of Thrones, because I've read Game of Thrones several times. I've watched the first season a couple times, so I know the story really well. So my most recent reread, there's like no tension whatsoever. I know everything that's going to happen. And instead, I was able to really appreciate a lot of the things George R. R. Martin was doing from a literary perspective that I wouldn't any otherwise. Now, I'm not saying that you just go out and say, here's the script, everyone.
Yeah.
Read away. But I am saying that we get so focused on spoilers that we're detracting from the movie as a whole. And like the whole deal with, and I won't say it because I know some people do care, but with the villain that Benedict Cumberbatch was playing, if J.J. Abrams had just announced that ahead of time, it would have been a lot less controversial.
I don't want to have to spend too much time on this. The spoiler thing, I'm not trying to, I don't want to argue about spoilers, but I when you say it's more of a modern phenomenon, I think the reason is because how media attention has changed.
Yeah.
So right now we have tons of internet sites and everybody's trying to get pictures of what's happening on the site and or on the set of the movies. And so because of the way coverage of movies have changed, it's changed how producers have to fight back against movies being ruined. So I think you're right. It is more of a modern thing that's happening, but it's because of how there's so much more available to us now that wasn't available 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, but I'm going way back farther than that and saying that for the most of history, the idea of spoiling a story was irrelevant.
Okay. I think like it's a different
Paradise
medium,
Lost.
It's a different medium. I think there's something...
No. It's stories are stories. Stories are stories. It's not that it's just a different medium. It's that we've changed from caring about the depth of a story to being like, we got to guard every last little detail in case someone figures it out. And you know how Paradise Lost ends? It's that Adam and Eve get kicked out of the garden. Spoiler alert! You know? Seriously.
That's how it ends?
Yeah.
I don't actually know the timeline of that story.
Well, it starts with Satan getting kicked out of heaven, and then there's some flashbacks of the war in heaven, and then he goes to Adam and Eve and corrupts them in the garden.
I heard that in Paradise Lost, Satan is sort of the protagonist.
Right. He's in the traditional role that a hero would occupy in a Roka narrative. Yeah. So the stuff like that that you can look at then and really analyze and think about, because you're not like, oh my gosh, are Adam and Eve going to eat the apple? Are they going to do it? Well, I read on Facebook that they do it. I read on Facebook that they turned into birds when they do it. That's just a theory. Well, I read that Satan is actually revealed to be Jesus in disguise. No way are they doing it. You know, it's a whole ridiculous spoiler thing. It's focus on the story. You know what? I don't care if I get spoiled. I really don't.
I think that that's where we would differ. And I think the reason you feel this way is because you don't care about spoilers, whereas I can't take your side on this completely because I do not like spoilers.
No. But the reason I don't care about spoilers, because I used to, but I didn't care about spoilers because I sat down and thought through the philosophy of storytelling, and I came to the conclusion that I should not care about spoilers. I still catch myself caring sometimes, and then I say, Ben, no. And then I feel better.
I think that not everybody has gotten to that place. So that's
I know. That's why I'm helping people get there.
You feel good about spoilers because you realize for yourself it didn't matter.
No. Not for myself. That's not the point. Point is that I sat down and had a philosophical thought fest. Yeah, with myself. I like thought fest better.
Okay, thought fest isn't bad.
Yeah, and I just read The Idiot by...
The Idiot?
Dostoevsky. Fyodor Dostoevsky. And I accidentally read the ending, so I knew who was going to die at the ending. And at first I thought, oh no, I just spoiled it for myself. Then I realized, no, I didn't, because this is a great novel, and it doesn't depend on if you know the ending. So I said, Ben, who cares if you know the ending? Enjoy the novel. And I did, and it was brilliant, and I loved it.
All right.
Forget spoilers. Spoilers are a modern invention designed to distract you from enjoying a story for what it really is.
I'm fine with you trying to convince the audience to come over to your side, as long as you still realize that there aren't people there.
Well, that's why I'm like, if you watch any of my book reviews, I'm always careful to say if I'm going to spoil something.
Okay.
Because I do realize it's a courtesy issue for me.
Yeah, courtesy. Yes.
Like, I'm not going to go out and just spoil stuff I'm not going to be a spoiler terrorist to try and get people to my side. But I will say that I think that you need to think through the philosophy of storytelling.
And as a reminder to the audience, we've established a firm rule here. If it's 10 years or older, we're free to spoil anything on this show.
So Jesus comes back at the end.
Yes.
Yeah, how about that?
But then the twist ending, they release Satan after 1,000 years.
Oh, no.
What? Why would they do that?
Worst idea ever, God.
Yeah. All right, next point.
Next point. Oh, let's see. Well, I got one more before the big, big hitters.
Okay.
And I think we've already mostly covered this one, so I'll just mention it.
Yeah.
That you got to have goals for your movies beyond just making money. I get that we live in a capitalistic system and that studios have to make money. Well, fine. I accept that. But storytelling ought to be about more than that. And this is where I go back to my philosophy of storytelling, which we're going to get into more in a second.
Yeah, it's hard for me to not think less of studios just because they want to make money. But at the same time, I know they wouldn't exist if it wasn't for the fact that they want to be making money.
I think the word is just that, yes, make money. But not just make money.
Yeah. Okay, good. All right, so I'm ready for your big hitters. These are your main points that you feel like are really going to win the day.
Well, you want to know what the biggest problem with comic storytelling, movie storytelling, most storytelling out there.
Yeah, what is it?
It's that we have abandoned the idea of Aristotelian aesthetics.
Yes, Aristotle.
Yeah.
He's got some great ideas.
So I'm going to bring in one of my favorite commentators, Father Robert Barron, and he's going to talk to us a little bit about Aristotelian aesthetics. So I have two clips, and the first one talks about Aristotle, and the next one makes the point and ties
it into art. Are you about the Catholic Jukas?
It's not Catholic, per se. Aristotle wasn't a Catholic.
But what about this Father Barron guy?
Yeah, he's a Catholic. He's awesome.
Okay, go ahead.
He's the best.
Give it to us.
Classical thought was very much ordered along the lines of Aristotle's four causes. So Aristotle said to understand something, you need to look at four things. The material cause, what it's made out of. The formal cause, its sort of essential structure. The final cause, where the thing is tending. And then the efficient cause, how it got that way. If you look at those four things and you understand them adequately, then you have a good grasp of a phenomenon. Well, one of the marks of modernity was a sort of mistrust of two of Aristotle's causes, namely the formal and the final. Modern thinkers put a great stress on flux and change. Think of, you know, the emergence of evolution and so on, that reality is always in flux, and so the formal cause came to be questioned. Also, many modern thinkers, most I would say, question finality. Is there really a purpose or ultimate orientation to things? They doubted that.
Okay, so we have Aristotle's four causes, right?
Yeah.
So we're tracking with this so far. I want to make sure everybody's on board.
I think you should break it down a little bit more.
So
can you just summarize?
Yeah, the formal cause, where something comes from. The material cause, what it's made of. The efficient cause, you know, what it does. And the final cause, what its purpose is.
Okay.
Okay, so like if we're to talk about this table here, Aristotle would say that the formal cause of this table is the ideal, the form of tableness. Okay? Mm-hmm. So if we think about the ideal table, that's the formal cause for this table.
I would call this the ideal table.
Well, so would I.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. This is the formal table right here.
Good.
And so then the material cause is that it's made out of wood, you know, and maybe some screws and whatnot.
Yeah.
The efficient cause right now is podcasting. That's what we're using it for.
Okay.
And the teleological cause, the final cause, what is the purpose of tableness? You know, so thinking about its
supporting
ultimate purpose.
Things?
Yeah.
Like lifting them up?
Right. So
keeping them up, like that way we can use this microphone. And
exactly.
I don't have to hold it with my hands.
Exactly.
The computer.
So
the soundboard.
Yeah. All sorts of things.
Go ahead.
So then, you know, in terms of stories, we can think about the same thing. And the next clip will get into this more. But the idea that stories have a purpose, and it's not just what are they made out of and what are they accomplishing in the moment, but they have a purpose in terms of where they come from and what they're intended to do. And he's making the argument that since modernity on, you know, and including here in the postmodern era, we've forgotten about the formal and the final cause. We're only concerned about what something's made out of and what it's doing at the moment. So, in other words, you know, and he'll give some examples of this, but kind of we're making this movie for the sake of entertainment in the moment. You know, we're not worrying about what its ultimate purpose is. We're not worrying about why stories exist. Or what they should accomplish. We're just about, you know, either making money, having a good time, whatever it might be. Okay.
Okay, we're on board.
So now we go to clip two where he will explain this more in depth.
Nice.
In a classical or medieval perspective, what was an artist doing? Well, he was surveying the world to see the forms, the formal structures that God the Creator had placed in things. And then the artist was trying, as best he or she could, to mimic those forms in what he or she was producing. Now, Thomas Aquinas referred to art as recta ratio factibilium. That means right reason in regard to the making of things. Now, what's the recta ratio, the right reason? Well, it's a grasp of the formal structures of things, which now go into the producing of artifacts. That's art. Now, the arrival of modernity, we have a great questioning of formal causality. Things are always shifting and in flux. And we put a great stress on efficient causality, right? Where things come from. So what do you find in modern art, especially as it moves toward the contemporary period? You see the great stress placed on the intention of the artist. The externalization of the subjectivity of the artist becomes the major value. That something is creative, that it's expressive of the artist, that's what makes great art great. The limit case of this is the famous line from Marcel Duchamp, the 20th century French Dadaist artist, who said famously, "What the artist spits is art." In other words, a complete questioning of the formal structure of art, and a hyper-stress on the efficient causality, what the artist produces. I would suggest we are now at the polar opposite of recta ratio factibilium.
Okay.
Okay.
Is this getting too heavy?
No, I'm with you.
Okay. So we've got two aesthetic visions here. The one would say that it's all about the artist's intention. So in our conversation, I'm making a superhero movie and I just want to see, you know, cool heroes team up and we're going to blow crap up. And that's what I want to do. And from a modern perspective, that's great. That's as good an aesthetic reason as any, because I'm expressing what I want to see in a superhero movie.
Okay.
From a classical perspective, when we start to bring in the formal and final cause, we need to think about, well, stories are meant to help us explore God's creation. They're meant to help us explore the spiritual, the philosophical, the sociological, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Whether it's in a positive way that we're exploring something good about creation or looking into the darkness of the fallen world. You know, stories are meant to do that, to tell us something about the human condition or the world we live in or our culture or something like that. And that's the purpose of stories. And then the final cause is to somehow change us from being told through their telling. And superheroes are uniquely situated to do this because of their mythological nature. The mythology has always been the primary way where humans have told these highest types of stories. And what Father Barron is saying, and he's not directly addressing superheroes, though he does in some of his other videos. He's kind of closet sci-fi Christian himself.
Yeah. We should get him on the show.
That'd be awesome.
Would you like to?
Yeah, I don't think we can do it. He's pretty big.
You want to try?
Why not?
Will you work on that? You're the Catholic.
Okay.
All right, work on it.
I'm a Catholic. Come on my show.
Yeah. Say, hey, tell him you can debate an awesome Protestant.
Yeah. You'll beat him.
Former youth director at Epic Life Church.
He had two youth.
Three.
Three. Sorry.
Three.
I don't want to sell you short.
Thank you.
You know, and so it's the problem with modern superhero movies is that I think they're almost entirely, and modern blockbusters are all about the purpose of the artist. The artist just wants to express himself, to use Father Barron's terminology, by just making something that's entertaining and amusing. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying there's never a place for it, but what Father Barron is arguing is that from a theological and philosophical standpoint, stories have a higher purpose than that. Take something like Dark Knight. That Dark Knight wants to not just tell a fun comic book story, it wants to think about issues like freedom, like heroism, and what those, and within a contemporary Western context. And so it's utilizing the formal cause of storytelling to say the stories are used to explore these deeper issues, and the final cause is then that we leave the theater, maybe even after a couple of viewings, thinking about these issues and debating what they mean. So Dark Knight, we can establish a formal and final cause as well as the two other causes that are so popular with modernity.
Go ahead.
Just to wrap up, most superhero and blockbusters don't worry about the formal and final cause, and in small doses that's okay, but I would argue that it is hurting us as a culture, and the storytellers have a moral imperative to get back to what storytelling is meant to be.
Good. So of the four, just to summarize, you think they leave out the formal and final,
yes,
but they do hit...
I forget what terms he uses. It's the efficient and material cause, I want to say. But those two that are in the middle, more about what is a thing made out of, what is it expressing here and now, what is it to me, what is it to you?
How could they miss the final? That feels like the most important one.
Well,
what do you think is the most important, formal or final?
Formal, actually, because you're thinking about where does this come from. Formal points us
final,
to God.
I guess in real life, formal is most important, but in story, would final, like how something concludes, be most important?
Well, it's not so much about conclusion. It's more about what is the purpose of your story. So the origin...
I guess that's kind of what I meant in the sense of how does it conclude in the sense of what's the moral it's trying to tell, or why does it exist?
What's it trying to get the audience to do? Yeah, absolutely. You know, that would be arguably the most important. Only reason I say formal is that I think that, you know, if I'm a storyteller, what's more important than sitting down and contemplating what is it in creation that I want to explore?
I like these thoughts on story, and something that came to mind is how often I feel like in the last 2 to 3 years, story has been a big focus of Christian communities and movements and books, and a lot is about what is the story that you're telling with your life, Christian, you know, talking to Christians. Are you basically trying to ask the question, are you living in a way that's bringing glory to God? So looking at these 4 points, and I know I'm putting in a spot here, but looking at these 4 points, how would you apply that to a Christian and the story that we're telling with our lives?
Well, it's the same type of thing, just not from an aesthetic point of view, that, you know, if we want to, this one maybe applies better if we think more about the table analogy, okay? What's the ideal of tableness? What's the ideal of humanity of, and then you narrow it down, of masculinity, of somebody in my socioeconomic standing? What's the ideal of who I am meant to be? And so to really spend time, not just what makes me feel good, how do I express myself, but who did God intend me to be? And then what is the purpose of that? You know, what is my final cause? What's my, the teleos that I'm aiming towards? And I think, you know, and this is where I'm going to get my Catholic plug in, you have to ground that within the church, right? The church is the people of God. And so what's the purpose of the church here on earth? You know, the church on earth is obviously imperfect, but it's the form of the heavenly community. You know, it's the form of the ideal of God's people here on earth. And obviously, the purpose of the church is very important. And I think that too often as modern Christians, we get so stuck on, you know, doing the same modernist thing of that we don't think about the formal and final cause. We think about how do we express ourselves? How do I live my faith? How, you know, and it becomes all about me and what's relevant to me. And I don't care what's relevant to me or to anyone else. You know, I care that we're living out our formal and final causes.
Good answers. Yeah. I like it, Ben. I'm looking at your notes at, were your other bullet points there all around these things that we just discussed, or do you have some more points before we head towards the wrap up?
For the most part, they are. Let me just throw out a couple quickies.
Okay.
We'll have a few quickies. First, one of the things that, and I don't think I read this, I've brought this up before, but I think I heard this from Jane Espenson talking about her time writing for Joss Whedon, mm-hmm. where she would talk about how he would always insist that the writer's room answer, why are we telling this story?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that right there is formal cause stuff.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's the question of the formal cause. Why are we telling this story? One of the things I found disappointing about the Avengers is that I felt like Joss Whedon lacked that part. I mean, it was brilliant with those middle two causes, but did it really express the formal and final cause? I would argue no. And I think that where my disappointment came from is that he's historically been so good at those two that it was disappointing to see him basically jettison them.
Okay.
So why are we telling this story? You have to ask that question. Next quick hitter. Realize that on their own, things like superpowers, villains, technologies, fights are the least interesting part of a story.
Okay, yeah. Character, right?
Character, story, you know, theme, all of that. All those things should support it.
Ooh, that's...
They should add flavor, but they're not an end to themselves.
I would say the two more important than those extra features you're just talking about, character and theme.
Yeah,
are two most important things.
Absolutely.
In a story. But it just sounded like you thought there was something above that. What is above that?
No.
No.
That's what I was saying. Misunderstood. Character. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, I think whatever you come up with when you think through your formal cause stuff, that's what's above it. But likely character and theme. Yeah. Good. So those are going to be the biggies. And then to go back to, you know, we talked earlier about how comic continuity is so convoluted and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the objection people might raise hearing that conversation is, wait, you guys are saying you want depth, but here's all this awesome complexity. You're speaking out of both sides of your mouth. And I would say, realize that complexity and convoluted storytelling do not equal depth.
And I don't think complexity equals convolutedness.
Right, Right.
If that's a, yeah, you can have depth and not be confusing.
Exactly. The example I've been thinking of as over the last couple of months is that you could sum up the entire plot of the first Star Wars movie in like two sentences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, farm boy joins the rebels, takes down the Death Star, rescues the princess. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's it. We just summed up the plot, and people can do it in their own words. But it's a very simple plot to grasp, but it's a very deep story mm-hmm. as well. Whereas you compare that to something like Iron Man 3 or Star Trek Into Darkness. You can't sum up those plots in a few sentences because they're convoluted and a complete mess. And so don't, you know, it's like they're just throwing stuff in there as a substitute for depth.
Wait, I want to ask you this. So I'm not necessarily arguing against what you're saying, but it's interesting. So are you saying if you can't explain a story simply that it's a mess?
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Clarify.
What I'm saying is that if you want to have a complex plot, that's great, but make sure that it makes sense and that there's depth behind it. I think that the convoluted nature of a lot of plots is a problem and takes away from the depth. And here I'll throw Christopher Nolan under the bus here as well.
Okay.
The opening 30 minutes, 40 minutes of Dark Knight are a mess from a plot standpoint.
Why is that?
Well, you've got this whole deal about radioactive bills and offshore accounts in Hong Kong and everything, and it's a complete convoluted mess, whereas if he had simplified that plot at the beginning, it would have made a great movie even better.
Interesting. Okay. To be honest, I had a point I was going to say, and then I started listening intently to your Dark Knight talk, and I kind of lost what I was going to ask you. So it's okay. I think it's gone forever.
That's okay.
Yeah, I'm interested in what you're saying about this being confusing. Does it have to be simple?
I mean, Game of Thrones is incredibly complex, but it makes sense as well. Like, you can sit down and think through it and work it out, whereas it seems like there's a certain amount of lazy storytelling that takes place with some of these movies, including the opening of Dark Knight, where it's not we're putting together a really complex story with all these moving parts and you got to pay attention to everything. It's just we're throwing a bunch of stuff in there in the case of Dark Knight for maybe noble reasons so that we can get at what we really want to talk about in the case of something like Iron Man 3 so we can have a bunch of fun action scenes. But in either case, it would be better if they would just have a simple plot. If you can't do complexity right, don't do it, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
And you can still have a deep movie even without it.
Excellent. Good. Strong points, Ben.
Thank you, sir. I told you those are my big moms.
I liked your heavy hitters.
Yeah.
All right, well.
Aristotle saves the day again.
Hey, I'm going to play the listener feedback music. Let's just pick. There was so much. Let's just pick some of our favorites. We're not going to read everybody's, but thank you if you responded on Facebook to our questions of the day. So here's the transition. It's a trap. Okay, so yesterday my question of the day was in regards to comic books. Assuming that there is a problem with superhero comic books today, what is one thing that you would do to make superhero comics better? Let's see. Now, do you have something that you want to bring up here? Or do you
just I'm still trying to find it.
Okay. Ethan Irway writes, I stopped collecting comics because of the escalating prices. That was like 15 years ago, but I'm not sure how much digital versions cost these days, but they need to be cheap enough for kids to afford them. Getting dedicated readers while they're young is key, and now there are video games to compete with, too. So that's an interesting point. I hadn't talked about pricing, but yeah, there are some crazy pricing for comics these days, so I bet that would help the overall, getting people more into it. And you were saying you can't, read everything if it's right. All so expensive.
Exactly. Yeah. Digital comics do typically get cheaper after the first month that they're out, so you can find some good deals there. I think digital everything is going to hopefully start to bring prices down, because a lot of the reason prices go up for comic books is you got to printing costs and all that are crazy expensive. Yeah. So
there's a new person that commenting, David Den writes, I can't seem to get into more than one issue before I give up. He's saying they're not interesting enough. That could be.
Yeah. It's probably because they're not reading their Aristotle, don't you think so, David?
I perhaps. Yeah. Why don't you go down to Arvel? That's another new new
Arvel list. Says, just one thing, take more opportunities to have the superhero books be kid-friendly. Yes, the bulk of audiences is adults now, but it would be nice for us to more freely recommend books without having to think twice about it, or screen books, or be regulated to just the Johnny DC line. Yeah, I agree. You know, I think that it's been proven, you know, we mentioned Pixar earlier, that you can have stuff that is kid-friendly and still appeals to adults. So I wouldn't want it to go entirely in that direction because, you know, think about something like Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns, which I wouldn't just give to a kid to read, but it's a great story. So I think you have to have room for both, but making sure you have quality stories of both and then having a way for parents to easily know, you know, and start your own rating system and have it be understandable.
Yeah.
And just be really clear, you know, and don't, in fact, I would say not even a rating system, but just say this book includes, you know, this level of violence or this level of sex or profanity or whatever, and avoid a blanket number, like avoid a blanket PG-13 or something like mm-hmm. that. And just tell the parents what's in it and then let them make up their minds.
Welcome to Level 7 is a podcast all about the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. So let's hear from both of their hosts, not former. He hasn't been on the show for a while, and then he started a new podcast, but of the Sci-Fi Christian, Daniel Butcher.
Yeah, this is our offspring here.
Yeah, so Daniel left us behind, started a great new podcast with Ben Avery.
Yeah, formerly, because we mated with Strangers and Aliens and produced Welcome to Level 7.
Yeah, formerly of Strangers and Aliens, Ben Avery, formerly of Sci-Fi Christian, Daniel Butcher. They're not really formerly of either of their shows. It just feels like
Welcome. They kind of are. I haven't seen anything from Strangers and Aliens for a long
Welcome
time.
Welcome to Level 7. It has to have a big push. It's brand new, and their episodes are great. So here we go. Daniel
always
wrote,
takes a big push to get that newborn out.
Daniel wrote, I would argue more time needs to be put into story and risk-taking. Yes.
That's what you said.
That's what I said. After reading the first year of the New 52, I felt like I read different versions of the Court of Owls and at least two other story families. And then his co-host, Ben, writes, I have a number of answers to this question. It's hard to pick just one. Format, price point, continuity, accessibility, availability, and content all come to mind. But if I was just to say one thing, here's what he writes. Story. Telling good, thought-out stories that aren't beholden to events and that actually develop characters and themes that allow change and growth. I could go on for hours about what I do. Ben Avery is right.
Ben Avery is right. John Wilkerson says good storytelling and less cleavage, and I agree with him completely.
Completely agree. Good point, John Wilkerson, because, yeah, it's crazy what they dress specifically the female heroes in.
Very demeaning.
Okay, well, let's go into the movies then.
Okay.
You want to take the first one?
Yeah. So my dad says...
This is the first time... Has he commented before?
I don't think so. Right, maybe once or twice. Most of this summer's mega flops suffer from two things. No plot, just lots of explosions and other calamities. Two, zero character development. Who wants to sit through 2 hours of special effects without meaning? Dad is right.
Dad is right.
Yeah. Good job, Dad.
What's it like having a father?
Oh, it's pretty nice. You should try it sometime.
Mickey wrote, consult...
That's a little bit of a low blow.
Mickey wrote that we should consult writers and artists of the superhero comics in regards to the movies. Do you think that's true?
Yeah. Go for it.
I don't know. I don't know if I completely agree with you. And I think it's Mickey.
Well, I didn't think through it that deep, so blame Mickey, not me.
No. I'm saying I think he pronounces his name Mickey, but if it's Mikey, let me know. Sorry about that. But no,
I've been saying it Mickey in my head this whole time. I know, me too. So it's going to be an adjustment.
So I don't know. I mean, I think it probably can't hurt to get some of... I guess it depends on what we talked about earlier. Are you going to be catering to comic fans or to a new audience? So that would depend on how I agree with you. Mike Poteet wrote... Focus on character.
Yeah.
Good. Now, can you summarize this argument that took place between Pastor Skip Crest, well, our former pastor, mm-hmm. and Kobe? I don't know how to summarize it.
So Kobe's basically saying, well, they both commented next to each other independently and then started arguing with each other, which was great. I quite enjoyed this morning. Kobe is saying you just have good actors like The Rock. Yep. And that's a fair summary, okay? I'm not being unfair to the little guy.
Now, did he bring this up as a joke or for real? Because he actually wrote, of course, more of The Rock.
He's serious.
Okay,
And then Skip said, kill superheroes. And then Kobe was like, no, you can't kill superheroes or they won't be super.
Well, I actually didn't think that was a bad point because even though we know heroes can die, there is a sense that we treat them as if they're immortal. So I do see what he's saying, that if you kill them in the movies, it does lose something of the superhero aspect. So I don't think he's completely off base.
Well, okay. But it goes on and gets better. So then Skip comes back and he's like, you know, less explosions, less CGI. Tell me a story I'll care about. And Kobe says, no. Like, he actually objects to this and says, the average fan does not want too much of a compelling story. So Kobe goes on to argue against having compelling stories in movies.
And of course, you had a chance to jump in there, but we won't read all that.
And then they,
I think everybody knows what
Skip
you would
said
say.
He didn't like Man of Steel, and Kobe said he didn't like Man of Steel either. So the two.
That's kind of how it concluded. They agreed on that.
But yes, there's everything about Kobe right there from his own mouth. No to compelling stories. Kobe is anti-compelling stories.
All right.
But it's right there in black and white. Go read it yourself.
Another new commenter. I've been saying new listeners, but it might just be that they're commenting for the first time. But Jenny Widner says, one of the keys to any good character development is that they have to have a weakness, and it needs to be exploited in the course of the movie. I haven't seen Man of Steel, but I was disappointed in the last Iron Man.
Jenny
is right. The fact that his girlfriend complained about the robots, wanted his thing fixed, and she was fixed at the end. I think he's talking about she's talking about the arc reactor in his chest.
Oh, okay.
She should have kept her powers and been more understanding.
Yeah.
I love the idea of an army of Iron Man robots. I haven't read the comic, so I'm sorry if this is different than the original storyline.
Yeah.
So what do you think about that? I like especially what you said at the opening. Good character development and weaknesses being exploited. Do you think that weakness is being exploited is necessary?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's part of compelling storytelling, is that if you're going to, you know, I forgot who said this. I think it was Raymond Chandler, but I might be wrong on that. But, that, you know, if you put a gun in the movie, it needs to go off before the end of the movie. You know, it's the idea that if you put something out there, you need to pay it off. So if you set up a weakness for a superhero, you have to pay it off.
It's something like if you introduce a gun in the first act of the story,
yeah,
it should be shot in the third act.
Right.
But otherwise, why did you put it in the first act?
Exactly.
And there's been a lot of cases in movies where they'll show something and you feel like, well, that has to come into play. Why else would they show it? And then nothing. And you do feel a sense of what was even the point of that? So,
exactly.
This Facebook listener feedback. Oh, actually, I want you to start preparing to summarize your conversation with J.S. Earls. That will be the end, but then let me just read this. Another first-time commenter, as far as I remember, Ken Anthony writes, I think that it boils down to a well-written story with a journey for the main character's story arc and a multidimensional antagonist. Getting great actors is key, but keeping it engaging is a priority. That holds true for the source material as well. That's great thoughts. So now can you summarize your conversation that you were having with J.S. Earls?
He was arguing that because big dumb movies make money, it's impossible for studios to change their mind and stop making big dumb movies, because as long as they keep money, they're going to keep doing it. Fair enough. And but then the one point he made that I don't agree with, he said, if you want a good story, go read a book. And I would argue that no, you can make these big movies and have great storytelling and exciting action. It doesn't have to be an either or, it can be a both and. Now, I think that he's arguing more from a practical standpoint as things exist right now, and fair enough. We're arguing from an idealistic standpoint.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good. Great. This week we had outstanding listener feedback in regards to our questions.
Good job, guys.
Thank you, listeners. And now
it's sci-fi Christian story time.
Yeah, it is.
I've got some stories for you.
Oh, wow.
And it ties in perfectly to this conversation. Over the last two Fridays, I happened to have some time around the old apartment here, picking things up, going through boxes, still unpacking. Dez has been busy. And I usually like to put on something on the TV while I'm working. Maybe sometimes it's Buffy, sometimes it's some other TV. In this case, in the last 2 weeks, I've watched two Marvel animated films.
Oh, no.
And the first one was horrible. So I want to tell the audience what's out there and then try to give them some good advice. I got from the Red Box, so I only spent a dollar or something on Iron Man and the Rise of the Technovore. Have you heard of this?
I have not.
It's about some sort of
the Rise of the Technovore.
Yeah, Technovore is like a kind of computerized, also sort of AI, but also sort of organic, weird thing is horrible. And worst of all, as everybody knows, I hate anime on principle. And it was an...
Even Superbook?
No, not Superbook. And this Iron Man Rise of the Technovore movie was strong anime. And so I couldn't barely get into it. It was... So I would anti-recommend this.
Yeah.
Horrible. One, if that. I'd give it half a star. Huh. I don't even... I want to give it... Can you give it 0 stars? I've never done that before.
Let's do it.
0 stars.
No stars.
I don't want anybody to see this movie. Really bad. The following Friday, I was flipping through Netflix, and I've never watched the Doctor Strange animated film.
Uh-huh.
As I start watching, bad news. Guess what? This also has an anime flavor.
Oh, no.
I know. So 2 Fridays in a row, but...
Ruined.
I'll give this one a little credit. It did actually make me a little bit more interested in the Doctor Strange character, but I'm still going to have to give it a 3.
Out of 100.
Out of 5. Oh. And so, still pretty good. Pretty good story. They told the origin of Doctor Strange in this animated film. Likely the movie will do it differently. But if you're interested, if you don't know anything about Doctor Strange, like I didn't know anything about this character, really. It kind of gives you a good introduction to the character. And it's only 1 hour and 16 minutes, counting closing credits.
There you go.
So that's not a bad commitment.
Yeah.
So, in conclusion, do not see Iron Man Rise of the Technovore. Do check out Doctor Strange if you are working on something and you have an hour to kill.
Okay.
All right.
I like it.
What an episode, Ben.
It was a good episode.
I really liked your last points. I like how that ties into not just superhero movies, but movies as a whole. And I felt great to get these thoughts off my chest about comics, because the more and more I hear about it, the more I feel like if somebody would listen to you and I,
yeah,
there could be some positive change in the world.
I agree.
Well, that's all from here.
I feel like that all the time.
Well, that's all from here. I'm Matt Anderson.
I'm Ben DiBono.
We are the Sci-Fi Christians.
Goodbye.
Signing out.
Annie told me the other day that she doesn't think humility is my greatest point in life.
Really?
I don't know what she's getting at.
Weird. That she would say that. Does she? Do you ever, when you are in an argument with her or a disagreement, do you ever pull out your phone and play the Ben is Right song?
Not if it's a serious one.
Has it ever happened though, jokingly?
Yeah.
Where
well, I told the story during Sci-Fi Christian Storytime one time where we were going to go to Outback Steakhouse, and I was like, you know, we need to call and do their call head scene. She's like, no, we don't. Fine, you do it. If you want to do it, you do it. And I was like, okay, I'll do it. So I did it, and we get there, and it's absolutely packed.
Yeah.
And the only reason we got in is because I called ahead. And as soon as we pulled into the parking lot,
you played it.
And we saw that it was packed. I pulled out my phone, and I played Ben is Right.
Okay, I kind of figured that'd be something you'd do.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... Okay. Hey, on the another note, 2 in a row. No edits needed.
Hey,
these episodes are
going to
go
that
up so fast. So, yeah. High five.
I resisted. There's a few points where I was like, I could say something bad here.
Yeah, you did a good job. Yeah. So, all right. Well,
I didn't.
So, folks, you might be able to hear these Shias posts every day for this week. I could do one tomorrow, one on Thursday.
Do it.
All right. I'll do it up. All right. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.